श्रीमद् भागवत महाप्राण की जय 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 श्री राधे। रस पंचाध्याय दशम स्कंद चैप्टर 29-33 द रस लीला पास्ट टाइम्स ऑफ राधा एंड कृष्ण एंड वृंदावन नित्य लीला मधुरीय लीला प्रेम लीला attractive, sweet, purifying, liberating, elevating, and satisfying. Text 28. Shri Shuka Vacha Iti Vipriyam Akaranya Gopyao Govinda Bhashitam Vishana Bhagna Sankalpash Chintam Apur Dharatyayam. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, when the gopis heard these contrary, indifferent, and vipriyam, unpleasant words spoken by Govinda, they became very morose, vishana. Their great hopes were frustrated, and they felt insurmountable anxiety, chintam, duratyayam, mamivaye duratyaya. This material nature is insurmountable. The gopis' anxiety was insurmountable. We started speaking Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary about this word Govinda. It's a sandhi combining vindate and ga. Ga means speech, words. And vindate means playful. That's why we say Govinda is he plays. Govinda is a playful name. And people like, everywhere in the world, people like the name Govinda. It's Govinda, the word Govinda itself, the vibration, it's full of play. It's Govinda. Represents Krishna playing with the cows, Govinda. It represents Krishna playing with the gopis, Govinda. It represents Krishna playing with the gopas, his friends, Govinda. So, Govinda is a playful word. You meet people all around the world. What's your name? Govinda, Govinda. Easy to say, Govinda. And no one has any trouble saying, what's your name? Govinda. If you say my name is Anaka Dunduvidas, they may have some problem remembering it or saying it. Because everyone's on the go. And Kali Yuga, go, go, go. Fast, fast, fast. The Govinda. But he says that Krishna's, he relishes, he likes to play with words. He juggles it. He's a word. That's why Prabhupada earlier, he said that Krishna was speaking word jugglery to the gopis. He was juggling his words. Juggler is a player. He plays. He's an entertainer. He plays with objects, makes them dance in the sky with balance and attention. The gopis didn't like the play because they didn't know what was the meaning of the play. They didn't know the background exactly. They were doubtful and unsure of his real intentions. Does he mean what he says? Is he serious? He wants us to return home? And he's disinterested? They have some doubts. They're not sure. Vishnu goes on and says that they actually, because of the bewilderment and the influence of their prema, the gopis were actually making tikkas and commentaries on the internal meaning of Krishna's words. They're accepting Krishna's words on face value. That's a term we say. Face value. What is the value of your face? The external meaning of your words. You said this, it means that. No, no, no. I said that, but it means this. Some type of hidden meaning that only you could perceive. I couldn't perceive it by your external expression. The meaning you hid within your words. So it's Gupta. Vishnu says they took the external, outward meaning of Govinda's words. And they thought that he's speaking indifferently because he wasn't interested. They were thinking, this is the nature of love. And true love, a person always feels, I don't deserve my beloved. My beloved is greater than me. And there's a chance I may lose my beloved because they are so special, much more special than me, much more attractive and dashing and charming than I am. And then that becomes even more aggravated if you see your lover surrounded by other competitors or rivals. You get more worried and more anxious because there's no legal bond. There's no dharmic bond binding Radha and Krishna or Krishna with the gopis. It's simply the bondage of love, which is made today and can break tomorrow. Love made today can break tomorrow. But legal contracts made today are very difficult to break tomorrow. As anyone who's trying to file for divorce well knows how long it takes. So many weeks and so much effort. You fall in love today, you can run away tomorrow. It happens. It's called one night stand. You so-called fall in love and then 6 months later run away. So the gopis are always unsure. If our affection wanes, or if our affection diminishes, or Krishna's mind changes, or perhaps he gets attracted to some more beautiful gopi. And these same types of feelings they were saying after Krishna went to Mathura. They were saying, oh, now he's with the Mathura Ramanis and the beautiful ladies of Mathura, sophisticated, cultured, wealthy, opulent ladies that know how to speak so elegantly and with so much proper refinement and etiquette. And they have so much wealth and opulence there. The streets are paved with gold and they have so many jewels. There's no gunjamala there and no peacock feathers there. And no mineral oxides from Govardhan. It's the big city, Mathura. And he's going to mix up and meet with those city girls. And they already heard rumors that as soon as he got there, he hadn't even seen the sunset and he already made an arrangements to meet one girl. He met one girl at 11 o'clock in the morning and he already booked an appointment for the future evenings. That's a pretty fast operation. He was there a few hours walking down the street and he met a girl, a Chandanwali. And then he made her beautiful and said, now you're beautiful and you're eligible. You have the Adhikar now. So then he made a booking. He made a booking on her flight, on her, so to speak. And later he went to the booking office. So the gopis heard about that. They said, oh, you heard the first. They said, look, he forgot he was in Mathura for a few hours and he already made an arrangement to spend a night with some lady. Usually if someone leaves his beloved, he waits a few days before he falls in love again. Krishna didn't even wait a few hours. I got off the chariot in Mathura. He walked a few minutes into Mathura. And he thought, oh, here's a likely one. Why did he pick her? Because she was untouched by any man. So she was fresh. You can't offer anything used to Krishna. You have to offer new things, bhog. So she was never touched by any man. And moreover, because she was Trivakra, she was bent in three places. She was always looking at the ground by force of her physical construction. She couldn't even look up. She would just grind. All she could see was her grinding stone. She ground her chandan and she would walk to the palace and hand it to some minister of Kamsa with her head bent down. Kamsa would take, and the minister or the secretary servant would take the chandan from Kubja and give it to Kans. In this way she was maintained because everyone in the kingdom, all the praja, are maintained by the king. So although she was bent over and useless for motherhood and useless to be married, everyone can be engaged in the service of the king and in the service of God and be maintained by that arrangement. So she had her place to stay and fooding and everything, and all she did was everyday grind chandan. You see in big temples like Jagannath or Srirangaji, they have thousands of sevites, Brahmin sevites, and they have one particular service. They may grind chandan and they do that every day. And then they have a house provided by the temple, Devastan. It's called the Devastan, the trust that runs all the temple funds, Tirupati Devastan. And their family, their grandfather, he ground chandan for Balaji, their father, their great-grandfather. And that's what they do. They do chandan. They don't do dressing. They do chandan. And they grind for 1 or 2 hours, and that's their seva. So the same thing in a kingdom. So the gopis are worried they felt that we don't have affection for Krishna, Govinda. So he's speaking in differently and telling us to go home in all these verses before the Rasa Lila. We came here for love. We came here for a love story, the Rasa dance. And now he's telling us why you came. Go home. Go home. So they're feeling now, they haven't spoken yet. Krishna spoke for 10 verses. Now Shukadev picks up the story and explains what the gopis are feeling and what they're thinking. Even he can understand. And Vishwanath goes even deeper and imagines dialogues with their mental dialogues. Everyone has a mental dialogue. When they're bewildered about some event, their mind has a discussion. He loves me, he loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. She loves me not. I should do this, I should not do it. If I do this, this will happen. If I don't do it, this will happen. Mental dialogue, internal talking. We're talking with ourselves, trying to chalk out our plan, talk out our game plan. And then we come to action platform. So Vishwanath is saying that the gopis felt dejected. They left everything, say, here we are, take us, we're yours, we're beautiful, we know it, and you know it. And it's a beautiful, it's a perfect night, the perfect night, the full moon night of Sharad season, the perfect place, the banks of the Yamuna in Vrindavan, the perfect time of year, fall, and midnight, and the full moon. And you're the perfect hero, most dashing, romantic, beautiful hero. And we're the perfect heroines. So let's begin the love story. Let's talk, let's dance, let's party, as they say now, or then. And then Krishna says, no, I changed my mind. I changed my mind. I know I called you here. I started calling on the phone. Please come to my house, we're going to have a party. Then everybody comes. Oh, I changed my mind. There's no party. Hey, Ari, we came so far. How can you disappoint us? We feel dejected. Why are you sending us home? No, I don't know why. Why to speak if you come to the party? You've been invited. Call on the cell phone. Call on them early. You get there. And then he looks at you. Why you came? Why did you come to the party? Well, you called me. You sent me SMS. You called me. So I came. Look, here's the message. Yeah, well, maybe. Anyway, go home. There's no party. There's no dance. What is this? This is a very strange way he's dealing. So they took the external meaning. They didn't try to squeeze out the internal meaning. He's saying go, but he means stay. And he's saying it's a fearful place, but it's not a fearful place. And he's saying that our husbands or our fathers or brothers may come looking for us. But actually he's saying they're afraid of the dark and they're afraid of tigers. They'll never come out to find us. Even though they could understand with their intelligence that Krishna's unspoken words is avyakta. Avyakta means unmanifested. Avyakta vakyam. We're actually vakyam, vach means speech. They were actually favorable. So their buddhi, their intelligence, was saying, their intelligence was telling their mind. Their heart was speaking to their mind. There's heart, mind, intelligence. Heart is chitta. So their heart was saying, their mind was saying, our senses are externally telling us, he's saying, go home. And our intelligence is saying, no, wait a minute. The intelligence is discriminating. Wait a minute. We were with him yesterday and the day before that, and we have so much intimate relationship. So it doesn't make any sense. It's not sensible. Intelligence has discrimination and tries to make sense of things. But at this point in time, intelligence, they knew with their intelligence, but they're not being ruled by their intelligence. They're being controlled by their love. Prema Vasibhut. That their Krishna's prema was controlling them and their prema was controlling Krishna. It was prema that was controlling the whole thing. So therefore, they took the external meaning. The gopis could not see any reason or a reason for Krishna's unfavorable, rough words. And they were doubtful of the hidden favorableness of the hidden affection in his unspoken words. So they didn't understand, well, why is he speaking so unfavorably and rough, mean, it seems like mean words? And we're not really sure what his implied meaning, what he really means, and he's actually means to say, I love you, please don't go, I want to spend the whole night with you and every night with you, and you're my everything, and please don't go. But they're not sure. So due to feelings of humility, which arose from their stai bhav. Stai bhav means their mood of conjugal love, their permanent loving mood towards Krishna. He's our lover, and we're his beloveds. But they felt some humility. Now, we often hear this connection between humility and Krishna consciousness. We learn this idea as soon as we come to Krishna consciousness about humility, which is a new idea for all of us. Humility is a very new idea for all of us. Because dainya bhav, dainya, humility. We're all very proud. I'm proud of my strength, my muscles, or my beauty, or my wealth, or my birth, or my intellectual abilities. We're proud of so many things. Or I'm a good musician. I'm really hot on the mridanga or whatever. You know, we get pride comes. We all have it. I mean, it's just part of our nature, being in conditioned souls. Pride. We come into Krishna consciousness, and they say you should be more tolerant than a tree, lower than a blade of grass. It's like, how is it possible? We come into Krishna consciousness, that everyone is standing on the top of Mount Everest. We're all standing on the top of a mountain. And I'll, hey, look, you know who I am. You know, I'm so-and-so. Whoever that is, whatever that is. And then they come and say, hey, you ain't nothing. You ain't nothing. You're zero. You're like underneath a piece of grass. Ooh, wait a minute. Really, I have to go from there. That's a big fall to go from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the grass. Top of the mountain, you have to go all the way down the mountain. You have to go all the way down the valley. You have to go to the lotus place in the valley. You have to go beyond the bushes and shrubs and find the grass, then find the piece of grass and get underneath it. And then don't let anybody find you either. You have to hide under there. Sink your identity and your ego underneath the humility fact, humility blanket. Bury yourself under a blanket of humility. Trinadapi sunichena. Trina, grass. It means grass. Very difficult. But in this, they say, if you're not humble, you can never attain Krishna prema. If you're not humble, you can never chant Krishna's name. And if you don't chant Krishna's name, you can never get free from your name and fame, and you can never attain the flame of prem. This prem burns like a flame. So then the humility is the keynote here, and it's the most difficult thing, at least for most of us, I can say myself. We can say, oh, Prabhu, it's good show. Everyone is good humility actors. There's a lot of good humility actors and humility actresses. Oh, Prabhu, it's like this. Like Prabhupada makes a joke. He says, humility doesn't mean like this. Oh, Guru Das, I want God, brother. Oh, Guru Das Prabhu, come, please, take my shoes. Pick up my shoes and carry them there. He said this, because we say Prabhu, like we say, oh, Guru Das. It's a God brother's name, Guru Das. Oh, Guru Das Prabhu, please. And then he orders him. He orders his Prabhu, which means master, his boss, his master. He orders him, oh, come, pick up my shoes and take them over here. This is our meaning of humility. Oh, Prabhu, carry my bag, will you? make my lunch, Carry my luggage up to the stairs. So we have to practice. We see even at the highest level, Gopi Bhav, Manjari Bhav, Sakhi Bhav, they're feeling humble before Krishna, humble before their beloved. Because that's the nature of love, that love itself breeds humility. You see, there's no greater love than the love of the gopis, the Madhurya Rati, the conjugal love, the intimate man-woman love affairs, the transcendental Krishna and his consorts, Radha and the gopis. But they're feeling humble. Humility means, I'm not qualified, he's so great, I'm nothing, he's everything. There's nothing in me that he sees worthy, I have nothing genuine. What's my chances? So this is actually one of the anubhavas, one of the physical expressions of their actual heart. It's not, you can't really, let's say, falsify or imitate humility. When our hearts actually become melted with devotion, then we become very humble. One of the signs that bhakti is deeply affecting us is that we realize how we're really not anything. We realize it. What am I anyway? I'm a big this and that. Then you start saying, what is this? This is nothing, and this is nothing, and this is nothing. Where's my bhav? Where's my prem? Even if you look in Madhurya Kadambini, Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur. It's an analysis of Shraddha to Prem and these things. So then he talks about Nishta. They say, you know, Anartha Nivritti Nishta, steadiness. When we're somewhat pure, then we can become steady in bhakti and confident and have strong faith. Then he says there's two kinds of Nishta. What's not Nishta? Nishta and not Nishta. Anishtita Bhakti and then Nishta. And there's 12 different symptoms. There's 12 different symptoms of physical and mental symptoms of bhakti that's not Nishta, which means it's still full of aparads and anarthas. And then read those things, laziness, falling asleep, and no taste, and still lingering, maintaining taste for material things, rasa swad, and many, many things are there. And you look at that and say, well, I have a long way to go. You know, I have a long way to go just to get through anishtita, to get to nishta. And from nishta, we have to go to prema. And the gopis are on prema at the highest level of mahabhav, feeling so much humility before Krishna. We're also before Krishna at every moment. We're standing before Krishna. We're standing before Krishna in the holy name, our mala and our kirtan. And the devotees are Krishna's representative. We're standing before Krishna all the time. But are we humble when we stand before Krishna? Are we humble when we stand before the holy name? Okay, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, this, where's the humility? But they're standing before Krishna. And this humility arose, it just arose from their deep love, this Madhurya Rati. Then the gopis became very unhappy, Vishana, morose. And they became lost in thought. That person, Krishna, the gopis are thinking, that person for whom we have neglected everything. We left everything. We neglected and ran away from, disregarded husbands, our mothers, fathers, families, our religious duties, our dharmic duties, our gravity, our fear and our shame. He's now neglecting us, ignoring us. Why? Because we are not good enough for him. The gopis don't feel worthy of Krishna's association. So where do we stand? Are we worthy of the association of the devotees we're associating with? Are we worthy to associate with our gurus? They're the immediate representatives of Krishna. We say, he's like me, so big deal. Are we actually worthy of it? Do we ever think like that? Hey, I'm initiated. I can sit on the same seat with the guru. The tendency is there. Are we worthy? We're not worthy, they're thinking. We're not good enough for him. Seeing their aspirations to serve Krishna smashed to pieces, the gopis became very anxious. Chintam. And they were thinking, should we make a false show of very humbly holding Krishna's feet and crying piteously, begging to remain here? You can imagine the gopis are thinking, should we make a false... The gopis are thinking that, like we hold some guru's feet, oh, Gurudev, Kripakaro, or give me your mercy, please be merciful. Is that a real exhibition of humility and surrender? I wonder, you can think. The gopis are thinking, this is a false thing. If we do that, we can make a show of humbly holding Krishna's feet and crying and begging him, please let us stay here. Or should we try to remain sober and pretend we're aloof? All right, yeah, okay, okay, we'll go back. Pretend to be aloof and unconcerned. Oh, you're not interested? Okay, I'm not interested. Pretend, fake it, and return to Braj, and somehow force our minds to stay grave and peaceful, although they're ready to explode. Or perhaps we should just give up our lives right here. Either right in Krishna's presence, we should just die. Or else secretly we should slip away and jump in the Yamuna and drown so he doesn't see us dying. Or some other means, take poison, grab some datura. All around this brudge there's these wild weeds called datura. And you take a few of those and eat them and you'll die. But the gopis think, if we end our lives, if we commit suicide, how will we be able to see Krishna's sweet face again? So the dialogue inside the gopis is going on with their intelligence and with their prema. Their intelligence is suggesting different discriminatory modes of action, behavior, and reaction to Krishna's ordering them to go. We'll die in his presence, we'll go over there, we'll simply cry, we'll just grab his feet and say, please, or we'll stay cool. I'll play cool. Yeah, come on, gopis, let's go. We came, it's not happening here, let's go somewhere else and have a party. Let's find Abhimanyu or someone. Go to Abhimanyu or Govardhan Mala and have a rasa dance down the Yamuna somewhere else. Pretend they're aloof. But then Prema is saying, hey, intelligence, what are you talking about? Forget all that. There's no question of giving up your body or going anywhere. If you give up, how will you ever see Krishna's sweet face again? Just seeing his sweet face again, it satisfies your very core of your being. And then again, how will we be able to, as he ordered us, eat the vomit of service to our husbands and other relatives? Gopis are very real tyagis here. They're considering, he's saying, go home, serve your husbands and your relatives and parents, take care of your calves, feed your babies or your sister's babies or whatever, take care of your calves and cows. And they're considering that dharmic duty, household duty, domestic duties of a properly married housewife to be puke. You know puke? Vomit. Vantasi. Because that means if they're considering that that's vomit, then the gopis at this juncture are showing that they're sannyasis. They're sannyasis and vantasi. Sannyasi and vantasi. A vantasi, vantasi means one who eats his own vomit. Vantasi. So when one takes sannyas, then he leaves his wife and children and family and home and name and money and wealth and estate. And his parivar and his name, he gives up his name and he becomes Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He's no longer Nimai Pandit. He's no longer Pandit Jagannath Mitra Sutta. He's no longer S.O., son of Pandit Jagannath Mishra, Pandit Nimai Pandit, Vishwambara Mishra, from the illustrious Gotra, certain so-and-so Gotra, Nilambari Chakravarti, whatever Gotra. Then he's just sannyas, social suicide. No upadis, no designation, just whatever he is. Some name, Dandi Maharaj, or Ashram Maharaj, or Puri Maharaj, or whatever. Chaitanya, he kept a brahmachari name. So they're thinking the same way, that if we go back, that's like eating vomit. How can we maintain ourselves? Where will we go and what will we do? That's their thinking. And Krishna had spoken so indifferently and so seemingly unfavorable. Krishna says the gopis were like chatiki birds upon whom Krishna poured the poison of his flute vibration. Chatikis, there's two words in Sanskrit, amrit and vish. Vish means poison and amrit means nectar. And both can be in a liquid form. You can have cyanide or some liquid. You can have a liquid in which you drink it, it's poison, you die. And you have another liquid like milk. Milk is also called amrit. You drink amrit and it's very health-giving. Amrit. So the chatiki bird, he drinks a special amrit of the rainfall directly from in the sky. He doesn't drink aquafina or bisleri or any water from the ground level. When it comes in the monsoon time and then the rain is coming, and he flies in the sky and he drinks that. And that's nectar. That's amrit for him. Amrit becomes no death. Mrityu means death and am means without death. So when he drinks that water, he gets all his life, his sustenance, his maintenance, his strength and nourishment from the water, chatiki. So the Krishna is playing his flute at Ganasham, that Shamsundar. He's like a monsoon cloud. He's a monsoon cloud and he's showering the gopis. He's showering the gopis. It's supposed to be the nectar from his flute. Usually we have the description that the Bamshi is giving nectar. Oh, the nectarine sounds and nectar music. The gopis are saying, that's not nectar. And that he's not Krishna Chandra. From that moon face touches that murli. And then all that sweet moon nectar, or that monsoon cloud of Ganesham, when he plays a flute, then it rains and showers nectar on everyone's ear. Oh, it's nectar, we say. Oh, Krishna's flute is nectar for the ears. And this mood, the gopis are saying, we're chatik, Vishnu is saying, the gopis are like chatiki birds, and Krishna is like a monsoon cloud with his vamsi, vibration. But he's not showering amrit, he's showering vish, poison. So when those chatiki birds fly up in the sky and they drink that poison, what will happen? So he poured the poison of his flute vibration because they were home, and then they heard the rumbling of the clouds. The rumbling of the clouds means they heard the rumbling of that monsoon cloud of Krishna's murli. And Krishna played the murli in the Sharad season, and they heard it. And like chatti birds, they flew in the direction of that monsoon cloud, which was coming as his flute. And they ran there. Oh, flying, they flew there. I said they were flying, they were going so fast. They flew, the gopis flew like chatti birds to drink the nectar rain, the sweet amrit. Varshna Amri, the nectar rain coming from that monsoon cloud of Krishna's flute. But then when they got there, they found out, wait a minute, this monsoon cloud is very strange. It's not pouring sweet, sweet, pure water in the form of nectar. It's pouring rain. Pouring, giving poison. We got poisoned. We got tricked. We were chatiki birds. We're innocent. We flew towards the monsoon cloud expecting, as usual, as every other time, to get nectar. Nectar, the rain is nectar for the chatiki birds who live on that sweet rain from the monsoon cloud. And we flew here. And what did we get? Did we get nectar? No, we got vish. Instead of amrit, we got vish. We got poison. Becoming overwhelmed, we trusted that monsoon cloud. Ganesham Radhe Radhe, Ganesham Radhe. Ganaras, sugarcane juice, Ganaras. That thick monsoon cloud, we trusted that cloud so many times. We've flown to the monsoon cloud and drank the nectar. It was bliss, it was joy, it was ecstasy. Vinogit, we sang the glories of that flute. We drank the nectar of those songs of glorifying that flute. But tonight, the Sharad Purnima, again that monsoon cloud is rumbling. And again we ran to drink the water. But what happened tonight? Did we drink nectar? No. Instead of feeding us nectar, that monsoon cloud of Krishna is feeding us poison. We trusted him, and we willingly drank that poison without hesitation. Did Krishna suddenly give up his normal quality of being easily approachable? The Vishnu Chakravarti's Tika, Sri Jiva Goswami Pad says, he says, the gopis did not understand the hidden message within Krishna's playful, clever words, Govinda Bhashitam, because they became very sad, as Shukadeva Goswami states. So Vilas Manjari, Sri Jiva Goswami Pad, his impression, his understanding, he's a Rasika Bhavuka. He's obviously Nitya Parishad of Radharani and Krishna, Kayavyuha Manjari, Vilas Manjari, Sri Jiva Goswami Pad. But he sees it, he's one of them, he means she. He's a Manjari, he's a Sakhi. And he's saying that this Vipriyam Akarnyam Govinda Bhashitam, he's standing right there with them, and he's saying that the gopis are just understanding the external meaning. And the proof of it is because Vipriyam Karna, you know, heard of Karna, the ear, Karna, he was born from the ear of Kunti, I believe so, and the sun god. Surya and Kunti produced a son named Karna. He was born from the ear. Karna. He said, Akarnya, Vipriyam. This was not very favorable music to their ears. We say, oh, this is music to my ears, what you're saying. This is Vipriyam, not dear. Priya means dear. It was unfavorable, contrary, indifferent. And Jiva Goswami says, there's the external meaning, because the next thing, Shukadeva Goswami says, okay, you hear something unfavorable. So what's your response to it? Okay, I heard unfavorable things. So I'm still happy. I'm still joyful. No, it says, Vishana Bhagna Sankalpa. Their Sankalpa became Bhagna, broken, and they became Vishana. Means very unhappy, very dukkhi, very unhappy, sad, very morose. So that means that what they heard the external, because that's what Krishna was speaking. Krishna was, what you're speaking is the external. Your ears, your tympanic nerve endings, your eardrum is hearing the words that are being spoken. Your mind and heart are interpreting something from those words. But the actual sound value of the words is something external. You hear it. Go, leave, get out of here, go home, take care of your husbands. Did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. Everyone heard the same thing. Because we all have ears, and that's what I said. Did he say go? Yes, he said go. Did he say leave immediately? Yes, it's dangerous, yes. Well, what do you think it means? Like if five people hear one sentence and you ask them what do you think it means, they may give you different... he said go, but he means stay. No, go, he means really go. That's called your mental interpretation of what you externally heard. Yuga Goswami Pada is saying they heard the external and they accepted the external meaning, and the proof of that is in Shukadeva Goswami's own statement that their reaction to that negative, unfavorable words of Krishna, like Govinda Bhashitam, was Vishana, unhappiness. Because we say it's not what happens to you that counts, it's how you respond to what happens to you that counts. So many things happen to you. Some people, something happens to them, and they, oh, this is too heavy, and they bloop. And someone else, some heavy thing happens to them, and they say, oh, this is very difficult. I have to chant more and pray more. I have to really cry now. I never really cried. Now it's getting too difficult. Krishna, please help me, please help me. So they cry, and then they pass the test and overcome the obstacle and go forward. They don't bloop and leave. So it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to what happens to you. That's what counts. Everybody will face obstacles. Everyone will face impediments and sadhana. Day to day, month to month, year to year. You have good months, good years, then bad months, and maybe bad streak of 5 years, 3 years. Keep on going. And they say all these business lines in America. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. You know, you start a fight with somebody, and he's just playing around. Then he gets heavy. Oh, you're getting heavy? Okay, I get heavy. Then he gets more heavy in a fight. Acha, you're serious now. Okay, then watch out. And then you go really serious and finish him, and that's the end of his seriousness. Hopefully. Or else you're on the floor. So when the going gets tough, the tough get going. You know? You can't just, it's getting tough. Let's get out of here. And you run away. Put your tail like Indian dog. Indian dog, when he's walking down the street, hey, I'm cool, man. And his tail's up in the air. I'm from America. All over America, millions of dogs, and all their tails are like down. They go down. They're down. And you come to India, all the tails go opposite. Their tails are always up in the air like this, like a flag. Huh? Looks so crazy. And then they're walking. Oh, I'm the king over here. Then another big dog comes. Ooh. Then he puts his tail on. Bye. Now you're the king. So we have to see how much the gopis are suffering. That's what Jiva Goswami is trying to tell us, that they're not feeling. They're actually feeling morose and unhappy and frustrated. This is, now he's describing the gopis, how they responded to. In other words, the gopis, this is the last straw. When we say the last straw, there's a phrase like, that's it. I've had it. I can't go. I reached my breaking point. I've reached my breaking point. This is it. I've had it. It's over. It's finished. It's done. It's very clear, gopis. It's not happening. This was a bad. We came out on a bad star. It was a bad night, bad nakshatra, and it's not happening. Look, it's over. Let's go. We tried. We failed. And we're not getting anywhere. He's not budging an inch. He's not showing any submission. He's not even smiling. He made one comment 10 minutes ago about our thin waist, and that's it. He said, Sumadhyama. That's all. And everything else after that and everything before that was go home, go home, go home, go home. Kritva mukanyava shucha shvashanena shushyad bimbadarani charanena bhavalikantya. Ashrerupattamashibi kuchakun komani tashtur mejantya urudukka barasmatushnim. The gopis hung down their faces and heads, and their heavy, sorrowful breathing dried up their reddened lips. The gopis scratched the ground with their toes. Tears flowed from their eyes, carrying away their kajal and washing away the vermilion smeared on their breasts. They stood silently, bearing and carrying, holding the burden of their unhappiness. Uru dukkha bhara tushnim. Uru duk, heavy duk, baro duk. Uru means heavy, uru means strong, uru means powerful. Powerful, heavy, strong. And then it's bhara. Bhara means heavy. It was powerful and it was heavy. Uru duk bhara. They're heavy, that unhappiness was so powerful, it was weighing them down. It was like a heavy burden on their hearts. Prabhupada's translation. Out of great sadness, the gopis began to breathe very heavily. Instead of looking at Krishna face to face, they bowed their heads and looked to the ground. They couldn't look at Krishna. They began to draw various types of curved lines on the ground with their toes. They were shedding heavy tears, and their cosmetic decorations were being washed from their faces by their tears. The water from their eyes mixed with the kumkum on their breasts and fell to the ground. They could not say anything. They simply stood there silently. By their silence, they expressed and conveyed that their hearts were grievously wounded. Well, this is the scene to meditate on, to see this in our meditative eye, for one who's meditating on the different acts of the drama, the love drama, the five-act drama, the five chapters of the love drama, of the Rasleela. This is one scene here in the drama that this discussion, conversation between Krishna and the gopis. Now it's one-sided. We only heard Krishna's delivery. And we're hearing the response, the physical and emotional and mental response of the gopis to his delivery, to his dialogue, to his talk. How did it register with them? How did it affect them? It's like, whoa, you know. So you hear something heavy, and it's like, you don't just, it's so heavy, you're shocked, you're stunned. Like, whoa, wait a minute. And then something happens in your mind backflips, and your heart quenches, scrunches together and condenses. And then you're trembling and you're silent. You're thinking, don't even know what to say or how to say it or when to say it or when to begin speaking or how to speak. Suddenly you somehow collect yourself and reorient yourself and become functional again and try to reply to that statement or those sentences that you received, which penetrated and pulverized your brain and heart and mind. So now we're hearing the description of the different anubhavas, the physical expressions of the disturbance of the gopis' minds and hearts. Obviously their minds and hearts were frustrated and broken. And so now there's different reactions coming, the anubhavas, the outward expressions of their inner love and feelings, their expectations broken. Disappointment is arising. Frustration is boiling. Confusion, bewilderment, disappointment, humility, all these are humility, this is Sanchari Bhav, and all these bhavas are rising in their heart and stirring them and moving them in different ways. But it's all on the background of love. It's all on the background of prema. So it's ultimately sweetness. These Baba's and these experiences and these expressions actually contribute to the sweetness of the loving exchange between the gopis and Krishna. Krishna's seeing it all, and we're seeing it all also. And Krishna's seeing it and making it, arranging for it to be displayed to all of us so we can understand the nature of the bhav, the mahabhava, the gopis, how they express these different symptoms of love in this particular circumstance of humbly hanging their heads down and their feelings of dejection, and they're just moving their toes on the ground. And these are different expressions that we see in drama. In Bharat Muni's description of Natya, it's called Natya Shastra, he describes how to convey different emotions through the physical body and what those different emotions mean. And these are all conveyed and incorporated in the enactment of Vedic Sanskrit drama, in the art of drama. This type of face means happy or morose or sad, and scratch the ground with your toes, and all these emotions and physical expressions are even described. And the origin of it all is, of course, Radha and Krishna's Leela. Because Radha and Krishna's Leela, that's why it's called Ras, Ras Leela, Ras. And this is considered the epitome of all Krishna's Leelas. All the possible rasas, the gona rasas, all the possible rasas are mixed up here. And all the varieties of anubhavas, udbhasvara, and all, many, many, the major ones and minor ones of the minor bhavas are all being displayed here from moment to moment in different interactions with Krishna. And it's all, and Krishna relishes it all. He's Rasika Shekhara. So he's the king, he's the Shekhara. Shekhara means the topmost, the pinnacle, the crown, the Shekhara, Shekhara. He's the topmost crown relisher, connoisseur, connoisseur of Ras. So in the kingdom of Ras, and this Rasadam Vrindavan, and this Rasa Leela with Rasavihari Sham and Rasavihari Radha and the gopis, all so much wonderful. All these expressions are so dramatic and so deep and beautiful. Of course, we're very gross and we don't have learning of these subjects nor appreciation. But if we can just understand the principle of what I'm saying, and then sincerely chant and meditate on the shlokas of the Ras Leela one by one, and then look at the word meaning and start to try to identify, have you ever cried? Have you ever felt dejected? Have you ever felt morose or unhappy? Have you ever felt disappointed? Well, we've all touched these feelings or experiences, or at least I would think so. Any normal human being, by the time he's 25 or 30, has experienced these different emotions if he's, you know, a human being. And if he lives in some corner with a, and grew up with, you know, inside a computer his whole life, then he doesn't know what human beings are. He doesn't know how to relate or go through the gamut. He's never experienced the gamut of emotional spectrum. He hasn't experienced the emotional spectrum in interacting with people, with men, with women, elders, juniors, lovers, mothers, children, etc. So all of this is there, and if we have some touch with it, although it's lokic and material, then we can read and try to become tanmoy. How do the gopis feel? Arjuna asks the same thing. Oh, okay, I'm a sannyasi. I mean, I'm a kshatriya, and I'm considered a worldly man, a politician, administrator, kshatriya. And you're talking about transcendentalists and spiritually minded people, equal visions. Vidyavanaya Sampana, you're giving me all these teachings about the viewpoint of Brahmins and seers of truth and liberated souls. But I'm a Kshatriya, so I have to see friends and enemies. And I have to make consideration, some Veda Danda, on the basis of politics. And I've been trained in political maneuvering from my youth. And, you know, I'm a Pandava, so I have to know how to rule and conquer, divide and bribe and give posts. All these things I learned. So now you're... So I'm asking you, Krishna, how does a transcendentalist, this is Bhagavad Gita, how does a transcendentalist, a seer, a sage, how does he speak and think? What is his worldview, his bhav? And Krishna tells. So in Gopi Anugata, if we're wanting to follow gopis and follow Rupa Goswami, Rupa Mandri, then what is their bhavs? Is it gopi bhav? What is bhav? What is their feelings? Why do they feel? And how do they express their feelings? And how? Because first you have to understand that's the Sambandha Tattva. And Rag Marg, Raganuga Marg, the Sambandha Tattva. Understanding the Nitya Parishads, whom you want to follow. Understanding their movements and reflecting on them and meditating on them, as Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in 10th Canto, Chapter 9, about the Damodar Leela. He's talking about Mother Yashoda. I mean, the verse, rather, is describing Mother Yashoda churning yogurt into butter for Krishna. And she's perspiring, and the flowers are dropping from her hair, and her breasts are vibrating as she's going like this, and her sari is moving, and her kancholi is moving in the wind, or whatever. All these descriptions are in the verse, very minute, of her physical form, her rupa madhurya, the sweet beauty of her form, and vatsalya bhav, motherly love, as she's serving her lala, preparing his butter in the early morning before sunrise. And the purport there, Prabhupada says, anyone who's desirous of following Mother Yashoda and Vatsalya Bhav, this is an ideal verse to meditate on the parisham, on the fatigue, and on the form of Mother Yashoda. Her form, the actual form, is called Rup Dhyan. Meditate, Rup Dhyan. Meditate on her form. And to meditate on her feelings as she's churning this butter with so much love and so much enthusiasm. And fatigue, even sweating to do it. So if that's true, what is true to Vatsalya Bhav, then it also becomes true to Madhurya Bhav. Anyone's interested in Madhurya Bhav, they find some verse about the gopis or manjaris, and they're doing this service or that service, and they're physically expressing this, or they're looking like this. They become verses for meditation, to meditate in a form during their service, or their feelings, or their absorption in relation to their service to Radharani, or to Radha and Krishna. So this is Madhurya Rati, Sakhi Bhav, Gopika Bhav. So this is why the Ras Lila and Veno Geet and Viraha Geet and all these Geetas involving the gopis and Krishna, and even whenever Krishna himself is interacting with different ladies in the different ratis that they display in relationship to him, they're also conducive for Raghunuga Bhakti and Gopi Bhav. Like he's interacting with Brahmanis, the Yajna Patnis from Mathura. And so he's testing them, and he's using the same verses he's speaking to them that he spoke to the gopis. Go home, this, that, you have your husbands. And they said, yeah, you're right, and they went home. But when he used the exactly same Sanskrit verses Krishna spoke to the gopis, then they didn't go home. So then there's different degrees of love. There's Samartha Rati, then there's Samartha Rati of the gopis, and that's contrasted when Krishna meets Kubja in Mathura. That's Krishna interacting with a woman in Madhurya Rati. That's also conducive to Raghunuga Bhakti, because that shows, that amplifies and glorifies the love of the gopis, because the love of Kubja is somewhat selfish, very selfish. So it's called Sadharani Rati, which means ordinary, commonplace Rati. But it wasn't ordinary, it was extraordinary, because Kubja, all of her love and attachment, her Rati, her Bhavarati was for God, no one of this material world. But she wanted to drive pleasure and joy, Krishna's association. And then the queens of Dwarka. So we may study Mahishi Gita, the queens of Dwarka. All these things are part and parcel of Gopi Bhav. And the Acharyas, they teach these things and reveal the relationship and how it helps us understand our desired Stairati and Sakhi Bhav. So this is a very wonderful verse. How Krishna's dealing with the gopis. And will you be there? And will you be assisting them? And will you be identifying with them? It says in manjaris are so much one with Radharani's heart and mind, her sakis, her nitya sakhi, pran sakis, that if they're somewhere making arrangements in some sanket kunj, sanket means any place, it's appointed, designated, chosen, the chosen place of lila, wherever it may be. And then they have gone ahead of time. Brindadevi has dispatched them to go early in the morning to make arrangements for a particular lila of Radha and Krishna. So manjaris are, say it, Radhakund, making arrangements. Just like you see, some people are pujaris, and they spend 12 hours a day making arrangements for the service of the Radha and Krishna, decorating the kunja, and so many flowers and garlands, and then preparing clothes for them, and preparing bhog for them, and lighting and everything. They spend 12 hours, and finally the darshan's at midnight, like you're early. So the same thing, the manjaris are spending all day. They spend so many hours arranging for special leelas of Radha and Krishna, decorating the julan. When it's julan yatra time, Radha and Krishna don't just walk in and say, oh, what a beautiful julan, they jump on. Manjaris already came there and put garlands. They picked flowers, made garlands, they strung garlands, they wrapped garlands all around the ropes of the julan. They decorated everything and they swept everything. So much preparation, advanced party. So when the mantris, pransakis are doing all these arrangements, meanwhile, back in Yavit Gram, Jatila decides, no, Radharani, you send some message, or when Dhanishta comes, if Dhanishta comes in the morning to get some, take you, or Kundalata. Kundalata, I'm not letting Radharani, she's not going to cook for Krishna. She's staying here for 3 days, she's not getting out of the house. I don't want her to, she can just do Surya Puja in her mind, and I'm not going to send her out for Surya Puja. So when the gopis hear that, when the gopis understand that Radharani goes to her room and sits down and starts crying because her mother won't let her go out, as soon as Radharani's feeling unhappy and crying, the mantris who are all the way down here in Radhakund, they start crying. So, oh, Radharani can't come. Jatila's locking her in the house. They start crying. So there's so much one with the heart of Radharani. That's why it's called pran. The mantris are called pran sakhi. Pran sakhi, that's the category, pran. Pran means that they're one with Radharani's pran. Their praneshri is Radha. And they're pran sakhis. So what she feels, they feel. What she thinks, they think. So this verse, and how do they feel? Then the mantris are feeling the same way. And they're also crying. Even you see in this world, if the child comes home from school, and the mother's sitting on the couch, just sitting there and she's crying. Because something happened with her, she and her husband, the wife and the husband. There's some bad news or some disagreement or some very terrible thing. So she's sitting there holding her head and just weeping. And then the daughter, the 8-year-old daughter, 7-year-old daughter comes home from school and she's la-di-da, ha-ha, you know, all happy to come home from school. Comes, mommy, and she comes and jumps. She doesn't even notice at first. She just runs in, mommy, and runs in the house and jumps, embraces. Oh! And mommy's, she just doesn't even notice the daughter came. She's so much distraught and crying, unhappy, broken-hearted. Then the daughter says, oh, mommy, what's wrong, mommy? You're okay, mommy. And the mommy's just too much crying to even speak. And then the daughter starts crying. It's very common. The daughter was saying, and then she said, oh, mommy, and then, mommy's not happy, I'm not happy. This is the idea. My mommy's crying, and the daughter starts crying because she's soft-hearted. You think mantris are less, the pransakis of Radha are less soft-hearted? How much soft-hearted they are. So this scene is a lot of pathos and emotions. And you see Prabhupada's translation. Out of great sadness, they began to breathe very heavily. These anubhavas, these external expressions, so the question can be raised, why did the gopis hang down their heads and breathe so heavily, and then why did they scratch the ground? Why were they scratching the ground with their toes? Like this. And Vishnath actually says exactly what toe they were scratching the ground with. The verse says toes. They're scratching the ground with their toes, charanena, just as their feet. Charanena, bhuva, like Mother Bhumi, likantya. Likana means writing or scratching. Likantya, bhuva, charanena, they were scratching the ground. And their lips, bimba adarani, their shushyat, shwasanena, shwa sanena means sighing. It says breathing heavily. They were sighing. Ah, ah, ah. This is sighing. Is it right? Is that sighing? Yes or no? Yes, no? Ah, ah. I mean, it's like when you're dying, you also sigh. You sigh and die. Ah, ah, ah. Shalega. So there is sighing. Ah. It's like sighing is a mixture of a broken heart mixing with your heavy breathing. When you mix a broken heart with heavy breathing, it comes out sighing, shvasanena. Because when you sigh, you feel your heart is pinching. To make this expression of sighing, which I just said, you feel some pain in your heart to do it. So they're sighing, and their breath is hot. And their beautiful, moist lips, are compared to fruits. There's a bimba fruit. I don't know exactly bimba fruit, But someone describes it as something very like cherry red, like a wild cherry. It's not a cherry per se. Maybe it is, I don't know. But it's very, very red and very nice and very moist. A fresh cherry, it's a little moist, but if it waits some days in the hot sun, then it shrinkles up like a raisin shrinks and dries up. So their lips are drying out. They're bimba fruit, they're red bimba fruit-like lips. They're so moist and so attractive and so radiant. And from their hot breath, it's like the summer, when the fruits are on the tree and then the summer sun comes and you know what a grape is. A grape is a very luscious, rasa-filled fruit. But if it sits on the tree in the hot sun and the hot wind, it becomes a raisin, kishmish. So their lips are turning into kishmish. Their lips were like drying up, they're shriveling up from their hot breath. Their tears are flowing from their eyes. So Vishnath answers these questions, why these anubhavas were expressed. This verse expresses what the gopis experienced in their anxiety, chinta. Chinta is also a sanchari bhav, chintata, anxiety. These are the anubhavas, these outward expressions of their sanchari. It's an anubhava of their sanchari. Their lowered heads indicate the gopi's shame. So I ask, why did they lower their heads? Just like, even you, it's amazing. Because even you see, if you have a pet dog, and the pet dog does something wrong, have you ever seen he hangs his head down? If you have a pet dog and he's living in the house and he's trained up to scratch the door when he wants to go out and poop, and then somehow he ate too much Sunday feast or something, and he couldn't control himself and he went in some corner and pooped, and then you come back from work and then you come in and he sees and goes, the dog, the kuta, he hangs his head like this, and you say, oh, what did you do? And he's like, but and then you know, and you look around, oh, you nonsense, and he put his nose, he say, you punish him a little bit. See, nonsense, you stupid. But then he's thinking, well, you went to work and locked me in here, and I couldn't get out, so what to do? Nature's call, you know. So even a dog can feel shame. It's not our children. Indians are more familiar with children than dogs. In America, we know more about dogs than children. But if your child does something wrong, he always has this look. Did you do something? Even I don't know how they learn it. And where they go to, they don't learn this in nursery school or preschool. How to look shameful? How to look guilty? But automatically, it's that anubhava is built into the human psyche, into the sentiments of the human being. You can see it anywhere. Indian children, I've seen all around the world, different children, and they do some. And the mother and father love it. They love that anubhava. And you see that he feels shameful. He did something wrong. He feels, because he broke something or whatever. And he's shameful and also afraid of getting punished. And the parents are relishing that anubhava. They're actually looking at it. And what kind of punishment? They're going to throw him out the window? What are they going to do? They're not going to do much to the child. Maybe a little tap or don't do that or pull his ear. Nothing. No real punishment. They won't punish the small child. So, but the anubhav, they are feeling very serious about this expression, really bad and like this. And then the parents are taking it very lightly but relishing it. Now just think, is Krishna less and the gopis are less? So when their heads are hung down as an anubhav of their chintata, of their anxiety about over fearing rejection from Krishna, impending, and also impending separation, because rejection means bye, you go that way and I go that way, which means viraha, separation. So they're anguished over that, impending and imminent and possible separation. Because he says, look, I told you, go now, go, turn around, go, tarant, jaldi karo. And once they turn around, it's over, gone. So this is, there's so much trepidation in the heart. So when they show their heads hanging down, he says it they express their anxiety. They lower their heads. The gopis indicate the gopis' shame. Oh, I guess we're not good enough for you. Because even they haven't looked at Krishna in the eye. They haven't even looked at Krishna eye to eye yet. They're looking this way and that way. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's like that, huh? They're feeling shameful. We're not good enough. Our love is not genuine. The gopis felt, because they were embarrassed. Usually a girl's shy. Usually she keeps her head down in front of some strange man. You see her in the village. The girl's walking like this through the fields and some man comes, she puts her head down like this. She automatically puts her head down, she looks like this. When she's walking in the field, she's walking, maybe her Tao is there, her Tao, her uncle or whatever, father, some relatives. Then she sees somebody, she's coming up this lane and some unknown men are coming that she... Because she's shy, laja, and she doesn't want to, feel embarrassed to look at some man or like this. This is the culture. So the gopis are feeling, we gave up our natural shyness and laja at the invitation of prema, love. Because love came to us. Krishna sent his love to us. Krishna extended his love to us. And that love dismantled everything. And we gave up our shame. I mean, we gave up our laja. Now we feel a little ashamed. Oh, you know, I broke my principle of shyness because he loved me. And so I let loose. I gave up my shyness for him because he's my beloved. But now I'm not a beloved. And he's not accepting my love. And then I lost my shyness and I feel ashamed. I feel embarrassed. But now my shyness has returned because she's been when she was accepted, when Krishna sent the invitation of love, then shyness ran away and she said, ah, I have nothing to be shy about. Krishna, you love me, you accepted me, and I love you, I accept you. But now you rejected me. Now shyness has come back. So when shyness comes back and I'm standing in the presence of a man who doesn't accept me or love me and has rejected me, then my head hangs down out of laja. As I gave you the example in the village of laja. You follow? So Vishnu, this is so much beautiful. So now again, shyness has returned. And when shyness returns. Laja is a state of heart and mind. Shyness, and it has an anubhav. Anubhav means a physical expression of that emotional position of the heart. Then face is down. Just like when a student or disciple goes before the guru, he doesn't go, hi guru, here I am. He usually goes with his head bent down, and this is a proper behavior. He comes a little bit bent over in front of a senior and like his head bent down. And this is anubhav of his inner humility and submission. Of course, you don't see it and it's nowadays. But I know myself, when I go to meet great personalities, I don't go, here I am. I go like this. It's natural. This is, and even if it's not natural, at least you can fake it. Because then they'll understand that you know something about the achar of a junior approaching a senior. Someone senior by age, someone senior to you by age, or senior to you in any way, by position, by rank, by age. He's a district magistrate or whoever he is. In a proper cultured society, there's certain anubhavs or expressions of submission and humility before a senior. But we're so animalistic. And as again, back to the Himalayan mountain of pride that we stand up. Here I am. Oh, then the guru has to bend down. Excuse me, welcome. You know? I didn't realize that you were here. You know, excuse me. My dear 25-year-old son. You know. Anyway, we gave up our natural shyness at the invitation of prem. But now again, shyness has returned. Everything comes automatically when you advance in devotion. How to walk, how to speak, how to sit, how to move, everything. Because bhakti devi is samvik shakti. Samvik shakti and lajani shakti. Samvik shakti means achar, vaishnava achar, behavior. Samvit, samveda, samvit. Knowing what to do everywhere, samadristi, samatarav, everywhere, what to do, how to move, how to behave with equals. And we got some basic rough parameters. always seniors, you serve and worship with juniors, you help with equals, you befriend, and someone who's Kanishta and Vaishnava Praya, you offer mental respects. Someone's taking Diksha, you offer obeisances on the ground. There's some minor rules of conduct. Those are very external mechanical applications, which people don't even do anyway. They don't even know how to use those rule of discrimination. But then there's so much more to Vaishnavachar and etiquette, and that becomes revealed by the power of one's submission and bhakti. As bhakti is said, when bhakti is within one, then Vasudeva, Krishna is living within you, and Radharani is living within you. So then you display aspects of love and compassion, and so much proper behavior and understanding of things and people and Krishna. This is the bhakti prabhav. Bhakti prabhav is not only outward and emanates from your very being, but bhakti prabhav is inward and fills up your entire being with bhakti. So bhakti is prabhav. Prabhav means influence. Bhakti's prabhav is inward and outward, expanding and contracting. Bhakti contracts within you and then purifies you, then expands without you to become your outward prabhav. First, bhakti contracts within you, and in that contraction, destroys everything undevotional. You know, contraction. This is contraction. Crushing. Before there's explosion, there must be imploding. Imploding and exploding. Imploding means contracting. How do they take the atom? The atom is already contracted. The atom is the sum total of material energy contracted. That's the atom. The sum total of material energy contracted is the atom. So they figure out, so it's imploded to the maximum potential, the atom. Then they figure out how to make it expand. Ta! And then atom bomb. Explosion. Big time. So bhakti is like that. It's like atom, an atomic particle of bhakti, anuchit. Anuchit comes inside like an atom. But it's contracting within us and crushing everything non-devotional. And then explodes like a volcano. Then the lava, you know, this lava, this liquid comes out of a volcano. It's called lava. Like we say, lava matra. It's called lava. And that's the outward prabhava, the sadhu, the explosive quality, the influence, the prabhava, the emanation, the radiance. Goes. If you're a little flashlight, your radiance goes through the dark night for 50 feet. Little flashlight, you know, chota torch. Chota torch, one cell, and you press in 20 feet. But you put six cells inside, lumbi torch, you say, flashlight. And then you go like that and goes 200 feet. So bhakti is like that, only one cell inside and 5 feet prabhav. And you have six cells and then 200 feet prabhav. So it's like a volcano erupting. So this is one point. So the gopis, they're... Prema has made us cast away our shyness, and such prema is praiseworthy. Gopis are saying this and thinking this. Prema is defined as that which controls the object of one's love. So there's a lover and a beloved. And what is the medium of exchange? What are they exchanging between one another? Love. I'm a lover and you're a beloved. So my commodity, which I'm trading in, is love. Service, dedication, love. And you're beloved. And so you're receiving my love, and the commodity that you're exchanging for my love is your love. So it's an exchange of prem, the prem exchange. And then, so they're saying that it's that prema, it's that my love is actually controlling the object of my love. So the love of the lover is controlling the beloved, and the love of the beloved is controlling the lover. Confirm. Right, Tota. Shuka, Daksha, Manjubhashini. You're telling what happened at Radhakund. Vacha. Krishna's gone home, Uttara goes to Leela. Radharani is lying on a bed of lotus flowers, perspiring in separation from Krishna. And the gopis are saying, soon I'll come on the footpath. You have to pull yourself together and freshen up so we can go down and meet Krishna when he passes through Barsana. Hurry, hurry. Messengers don't stay long. When you get a courier mail, how long does the courier mail mailman stay there? Sir, courier mail, sign your thing, bye. Vroom. Right? It's called courier mail. The mailman, any mailman, does mailman come and spend all afternoon with you? He comes, here's your mail. Oh, he doesn't even spend, he puts it in a box. So they came, gave the mail, and left. Totobasha. Totobashitam. But if we have the ears, then we can hear. If we have the eyes, then we can see. If we have the heart, then we can feel. It's Prem Dham Vrindavan. This is Prem Dham. What Dham am I? I'm Kam Dham. They have Anand Dham, these apartment houses, Adan Dham and Krishna Dham and all these Dhams. Well, this body is an apartment house for the soul. My soul is living in this apartment of the body. So what's the name of this apartment? Kam Dham? Kam is lust, huh? The abode of lust. Krishna, this is prema. Prema, what is prema? It controls the lover. But if Krishna, the object of our love, has not been conquered and controlled by our love, then what does that mean? Then that means that our love, our prema, must not be genuine. The definition of prema is if I have prema, then my prema controls my beloved. If my beloved is not controlled, my prema is useless. It's not prema. If that is the fact, then why and what was the purpose of us giving up our shyness? We gave up our shyness to offer to our beloved because love took away our shyness. But now we have no shyness, but I guess we have no love either because our lovers rejected us. Our love is not genuine and we lost our shyness. So we lost on both sides. We lost our shyness, which is the natural treasure of a woman, that charm of shyness. And we didn't gain his love, the love of our beloved, which we desired. So that means our love is insufficient and non-existent. This is their thinking. Now, Vishnu comments. In this way, the gopis felt vishana, remorse and embarrassment. They're remorseful and happy about we got jilted, we got stood up, we got rejected by our lover. And they felt embarrassed because I gave up my shyness. That's my greatest treasure. I just abandoned it and gave my complete self to this person. Now he just dumped me, rejected me. So I feel so embarrassed. How can I show my face? How can I show my face anywhere? I feel shameful. So let me look at the ground. So they're looking at the ground. This remorse and embarrassment was expressed in their faces. So this is the position of the heart, remorse and embarrassment, this chinto. These are all sanchari bhavs. And the anabhavs of that is expressed in their faces. They're sighing, they're breathing, their lips are drying up, their tears are flowing from their eyes, their kajals washing up their eyes, the kunkum is dripping down their breasts. They're in a terrible state. Heartbroken. And the body is registering and exhibiting the breaking of their hearts. Very touching scene in this particular juncture of the love drama. This is a love story. But this is kind of on a bell curve. The curve goes up like this. Seems like a low point on the love story, or maybe it's a high point. Because all the points are high. This is also the love story. This is the love itself. Because the gopis they're showing and they're thinking and their expressions that we're not good enough for Krishna. So then, where do we stand? Are we good enough for Krishna? The gopis are feeling humble and unqualified for Krishna. And they're feeling their love is not genuine. So do we feel humble before Krishna? And do we feel unqualified? And do we feel that our bhakti and love is not genuine? And it's not real prema. We don't have any real love or devotion for Krishna. Otherwise, we would perceive him more. And we could control him more and bring him closer to our side. But it's not happening. So we have to, as the gopis are examining themselves and cross-examining the nature of their bhav, we as followers of the gopis and aspiring devotees, lovers of God, we should examine the content and quality of our own bhakti and our own sincerity. They're trying to measure themselves. It's called self-analysis. Self-analysis. Introspection. Look within your introspection. Inspection means examine, look. What is inside my heart? Is it acceptable to Krishna? Is it agreeable to Krishna? Is it will it please Krishna what's in my heart? Maybe not. If Krishna, let me show you what I have in my heart. I have some really good some goodies in here. I have some goodies in my heart. You want to see? How about this one? Oh, yuck! No! Wait, I've got another one. Pop. How about this one? I have another one. if we pull out what's inside our heart, will Krishna really say, "Wow, you have some good stuff there. You have some really valuable things and attractive, sweet and fragrant charms within your heart. I didn't know you had so many treasures there, so many nitties there. I'm very satisfied and pleased with your love offering. In fact, can I keep all these things? I treasure these. I want to put these in my treasure house, in my prem kosh. I'll give you some of my treasures in return. Here, take this and take this. The love exchange. Well, the gopis, they're expressing this remorse and embarrassment in their faces. Their reddish lips were drying up because of hot breathing that arose from lamentation, vilap. When the hot sun dries out the red bimba fruits, dark spots, little black spots appear on them, and they grow very soft. Similarly, the beautiful lips of the gopis changed in appearance. Those beautiful bright red lips started to get black spots on them and dried out. The sign of their shame is indicated by their scratching. Why did they scratch the earth? Because they felt shameful and embarrassed. And this is a actual Anubhav in Natya Shastra, in drama, that the lover, if she wants to show shyness or embarrassment, she'll scratch the ground like this. And what foot was she scratching the ground with? They were scratching the earth with their left big toes. And that's really precise. The verse is charanena, charanena bhuva likantya. Likanta, likan, likana. This is the big toe. This is, the big toe and the foot. I mean, that's the toe. There's only the toe and the other ones are little toes. The big toe. So they were scratching with their toes, which means you have to lift the foot up, Your feet are there. You can go like that. And you can scratch with these toes. You can bend these toes. But it's a little hard to bend the big toe. So they had to lift their feet. Their feet were lifted up and they were scratching. It almost looks like a dance mudra, You ever did this when you're dancing? Scratch? Because if the foot is flat, just imagine, if your foot is flat, can you scratch with your toe? Not possible. So they had to lift their feet, were lifted something, and there was this. So it also looked very beautiful. Actually looked very attractive to Krishna. That physical, it's a mudra. It almost looked like a dance mudra, which is very interesting, because in a few minutes they're going to begin, within like some time, they'll begin the rasa dance. So this gopis are standing, for them to, with their big toe to scratch the ground, they would have to stand up, put their whole weight of their body is kind of on their right foot. And they lift their left foot and scratch. Can you imagine? So that looks very graceful. And it accents the curves of their body, and they look very beautiful then. To the eye of the beholder, to the eye of the beloved, to their Shamasundara, they look very attractive that way. So although they're showing their embarrassment, it's an anubhav of their shame due to giving up their lajabhav, and they're feeling shameful. But then, and their expression of the anubhava of shame, they're actually showing a newer expression of loving attraction to Krishna's senses. So they're actually increasing his love by their mudra or their physical display of their embarrassment or their shame, they're actually enhancing Krishna's attraction to their beautiful forms. Because before he remarked sumadhyama, that you have thin waist, sumadhyama, because they're standing there. And now they're like this. So they look more beautiful to Krishna. Because we must understand the gopis are made of mahabhav. Their feet, their eyes, their heart, everything is mahabhav. And then mahabhav means the greatest, most ecstatic joy and satisfaction and love for Krishna. Mahabhav sarupini radha. Sarup, rupam. Her very rupam, her swarupam is mahabhav. Her every movement of her fingers, of her toes, her ankle, her calves, her legs, it's full of mahabhav. For whom? For Krishna. For Rasaraj. So he relishes. Do you don't think that Krishna loves every part of Radharani's body? He loves her mind, her thoughts, her words, her form, her ankles, her thin ankles, her beautiful feet. He caresses Radharani's dainty, delicate feet to his chest and even to his forehead. Smara Garala Kandanam. Smara Garala Kandanam? How do you know? Mama Shirasi Mandanam. Mama Shirasi Mandanam. Oh, Radharani. My head, Mandanam. Please let your feet be an ornament. Let your feet be an ornament on my head. No ornament. Ladies wear ornaments and decorations and things on their hair part. So he's saying, Smara Garala Kandanam. Smara. Smara means erotic love. The god of love, Smara Garala Kandanam. Kandana means break, like you know, you have a Kanda Kirtan. And he's one of our Kirtaniers in the Mandali, this devotee, one of the expert singers and musician devotees. So then, Akanda Kirtan means no break. So Krishna is saying, Smara Garala Kandanam. Garala means snake poison, Kalakuta poison. Kalakuta poison, like Lord Shiva drank. Lord Shiva drank the Kalakuta poison from the Kir Samudra Mantan. Kir Samudra Mantan. The Devas and Asura were churning, the demigods and devotees were churning the Kir Sagar, the milk ocean. They were churning milk and they produced poison. Very interesting. They're churning Amrit and you produce poison. Usually when you churn milk, what do you produce? When you churn milk, you produce what? Butter, in case you don't know. If you churn milk, you produce butter. You don't know. There's fat inside the milk. As you churn it, then the fat comes up because fat is lighter than milk. I've done it. Oil, you know, oil floats on water. Have you heard that? You've seen it? Fat, butter is oil, and milk is water. And so it becomes butter. So they're churning the milk and they get vish. Oh, everything that comes out of that churning, someone has to take. Because that's the result of their work, their cooperative work. Who will take the poison? Shiva took the poison. He became Nilakant. Nilakant Mahadeva ki jai. So, Smara Garala Kandanam. So this Garala is like that Kalakuta poison, Halahuta poison. Only Shiva, no demigod Agni, they have so much mystic powers, mystic cities. They say, no way, I'm not touching that. And it's so virulent and poisonous that when Shiva was drinking it, some drops fell down. And what did they become? Those drops turned into cobras. Cobras and scorpions. So Krishna is telling Radharani that he loves her so much that Smaragara Lakandanam, I'm burning from this heavy poison of this lust and erotic love. So please, Smaragara Lakandanam, you break it, you stop it, you destroy it, remove it. How can I do that? Mama Shirsi Mandanam. Still, what are you saying? You're saying break the poison. You're burning from the poison of Kamadev, Kamadev's poison, and you're saying, give me some ornament. You want my, what's that called? What's this thing called? There's a name for it. Jewels coming down here? Tika. Give me your tika. You want my, you're saying, Mama Shirasi Mandanam, your, you know, Shirasan, huh? You want to decorate ornament. Mandanam means ornament. Please, I want you to ornament my head. Oh, here, take my tika. This tika, the ladies wear these little pearls down the part of their hair and it goes like this. It's called tika. Tika. Oh, you want my tikka? No, no, no. I don't want that. What does Krishna say? Dehi parapalavam. Dehi parapalavam. Udharmatapam. He says, I, a dehi, dhanandehi, janandehi, Radharani, please give me your feet, which are like palava. Palava. They're like small, like a small leaf bud. Before a leaf opens up, it's very closed and very soft, little red on the tip. So Radharani's feet are shaped so delicate and gentle shape, tender shape, and a little reddish on the bottom, natural red. So I put those leaf bud-like feet on my forehead. So Krishna loves every part of Radharani's body, from her feet to her head, because it's all Mahabhava, soothing, satisfying, elevating, ecstasy producing. So when Radharani's standing, scratching the ground with her left big toe, how beautiful she looks. How many waves of love and Mahabhava she's emanating just from her big toe. Apara siddhi riddhi digda sat padangalina ke. Apara siddhi riddhi sat. And Lord Shiva is glorifying the power of Radharani's feet, the power of her toenails, from the Aishwarya Vichar, from the conception of grandeur and opulence and majesty. Apara siddhi riddhi digda sat padangalina ke. Sat padangalina ke. Nake means nail. Padangali, ungali means toe. Pada means foot. From her toenails, what comes from Radharani's toenails? Light, jyoti, jyoti. Brilliant light, like 10,000 rubies, 1 million rubies, shining, the most costly, 10, 20 carat rubies, beautiful, effulgent, costly, $1 million, $10 million. Thousands of lights emanating from her feet. And in that radiant light of Radharani's toenails, you'll find all mystic cities. Apara, unlimited, transcendental. Apara, siddhi, riddhi, sat padangalina ke. Eternally manifested there, sat, from her feet are unlimited powers and mystic opulences, and riddhi. Riddhi means wealth, money, power, position. So that's Shiva's viewpoint, his appreciation of Radharani's feet. Do you think Krishna has Aishwarya Vichara of Radharani's feet? He has Madhurya Vichara. He considers the sweetness, the love, the bhava of Radharani's feet. And what to speak when with her left big toe she's scratching the ground, feeling shameful, having sacrificed her lajabhav for a lover that rejected her. This is the scene. The sign of their shame is indicated by scratching on the earth with their left big toes. The gopis thought, this is their thinking, because there's thinking, feeling, willing. We think, we feel, we will. Will means action. The anubhav is the physical expression of your thoughts and feelings. If I'm angry, I feel anger in my heart. I feel some hatred. And then I show my anubhav. Hey, dank. So first there's some emotion. There's some moving of the hearts. And then there's the outward expression. So if the gopis are showing this, they're not just, okay, girls, let's start scratching the ground, okay? One, two, three, scratch. It's not some child's game. These are anubhav, bhav, bhav, love, feeling, expressions of intimate attachment, love. Anu means following, that which follow. Anu means following something in the heart. The mother, the sweet conjugal love is rising in waves and sancharis this way, that way. And one is going to shame, one is going to chinta, one is going to anxiety and shame. And so many waves are coming in the ocean and moving in this way and that way, and their eyes this way, and they're breathing that way, and their toes this way. So then they're thinking while they're expressing their thinking. When you're doing something, you're thinking, oh, why are they scratching Mother Earth? Why don't they just go like this? They can make circles in the sky. They can just take... Why don't they just point their finger like this and go like this? They can go like this. What's to stop them? To convey. But that doesn't convey their shame or their embarrassment. Because they're thinking, oh, Mother Earth, why are we scratching you? Because we want you to open up. We want you to open up. We're scratching. Oh, Mother Earth, please open up, because we want to jump inside you right now. Open up, let us jump inside you, then close and let us disappear, never be seen before and seen again by Krishna. How do we get out of here? Let's get out of here. And they don't know any disappearing acts, and they're not Superman, or they can just disappear or vaporize themselves. So they're trying to find a way out. Oh, we gave up our shame. We better die first. We can't go back to the village because we lost our shame. It became shameful. We lost our lajja. So they're feeling embarrassed. And we can't show our face to anyone, so we're looking at the ground. Oh, Mother Earth, you're a lady like us. And you understand we gave up our shyness for this lover who's rejected us. And we can't go back to our village because we can't show our face to our mother or father because we gave up our shame and our shyness and threw it at the feet of this Nagar. And now he's cast us aside and rejected us. He's called us out here in the middle of the night and ruined our reputation. Now he's sending us back home. How can we show our face again in front of our mother and father after running away in the middle of the night and saying, get out of here. I'm going to my beloved. Don't stop me with your stick in your hand. Nobody can stop me. He's my lover. And then you come back. Well, guess what? Then your mother and father, hey, what happened to your lover? What happened to your Nagar? Oh, well, He jilted me. He dumped me. He rejected me. He threw me out. He threw me, told me to come, go get out of here. Huh, well, you better go find somewhere else to stay. Get out of here. Rejection. So I can't go back and show my face to my husband or to my mother. So I put my face to the ground and say, Mother Earth, you're my only shelter. Oh, Mother, oh, Bhumi, please, don't forsake me. I'm a lady, you're a lady. Oh, Bhumi, oh, Mata, please, open up now. Quick, 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 open up. Let me jump inside. This is their feeling. Intense. Please, please open up so we can jump inside you right now. So we'll continue more about the sorrow and remorse of the gopis tomorrow. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So how much vipralamba, separation and identifying with these moods, they're very purifying. Srimad Bhagavatam, Rasa Granth.